Hey, this is the part of the interview where I promote the interview by telling you what's coming up and make you really get fired up to learn and to watch and to pay attention all the way to the end. I'm not going to tell you what's coming up this time. I'm not going to tell you what's in this interview at all. Instead, what I'm going to tell you is what's inside you. There are days when you're not motivated. There are days when you're questioning every decision you ever made, questioning yourself too. So here's what I'm going to say. After you finish this program, save it. Save the video if you choose video, save the audio, save the transcript, however you prefer to enjoy this program, save it for those days because it is so inspiring and so educational and so helpful that on those days it's going to come through with both a pep talk and actionable ideas. Save it, but start by paying attention to it right now. Here it comes. Listen up. I hate to have commercials interrupt this interview, so I'm going to tell you about three sponsors quickly now, and then we're going to go right into the program, starting with Walker Corporate Law. If you need a lawyer who understands the startup world and the tech community, I want you to go to walkercorporatelaw.com. Next, I want to tell you about Shopify. When your friend asks you, "How can I sell something online?" I want you to send them to Shopify and explain to them that Shopify stores are easy to set up, they increase sales, and they'll make your friend's products look great. Shopify. Finally, I want to tell you about Grasshopper. Do you want a phone number that people can call and then press 1 for sales, 2 for tech support, etc., and have all of the calls be routed to the right person's cell phone? Well, get your number from grasshopper.com. All right, let's get started. Hey there, freedom fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, home of the ambitious upstart. And you know, I keep looking for little bits of information in interviews that don't usually stand out, but I think have big impact. Well, in a couple of interviews that I did with successful entrepreneurs, I happened to notice that they said because they sold Cutco knives earlier in their careers, they became good salespeople. So I filed it away and I said, I think in a past interview, I wonder what it is about Cutco. What are they teaching their people? I'd like to learn that. And a fan in the audience heard me say that, and he helped me land today's guest. Hal Elrod, who you see up on your screen, is a Cutco Hall of Fame sales rep and manager. He is also a motivational speaker who inspires business people and college students with stories of what he learned in business and from recovering from a terrible car accident. He's also the author of, let's see if I could hold this up properly, like really professional style. There it is. The number one best-selling book, Miracle Morning, The Not-So-Obvious Secret Guaranteed to Transform Your Life. Welcome, Hal.
Welcome. Thank you. I appreciate it, Andrew.
How much money would you say you've sold in knives? What's the value of all the knives that you've sold?
I've sold $754,000 of Cutco.
Wow.
And if you know how expensive Cutco is, that's 5 sets. No, I'm just
kidding. How expensive are they?
It ranges. My average customer spent, when I was newer in my career, about $350 was my average sale. And then as I got more experienced and, you know, understood how to better present, when I finished my career, it was about double that, about a little over $700 average sale.
Unbelievable. All right. Not from a store, not from, you know, you're just walking into someone's home who you have a referral from or who maybe you know directly, and you tell them about the knives and you sell them. And you talk to Jeremy Weiss, our producer, and pulled out a few tactics that you use that helped you become better at sales that I'm hoping my audience can learn from. Starting with, you say don't just have goals and review them. One of the interesting things that you say is you advise us to review our goals and to share them with our customers. In fact, you did this with a woman named Donna. Can you tell the audience what happened there?
Yeah, I was trying to set a record. No sales rep in Cutco's 50-year history had ever posted 3 consecutive $10,000 weeks. Right. And I had posted 2 consecutive $10,000 weeks, which had been done just a couple times. And I was trying to hit my third. I was trying to set this record. And it was Saturday morning. I can picture the house. Like if I'm pulling up to her house, I'm at 7,200 for the week in sales. And I've got till Monday morning. So basically day and a half, you know, 2 days to sell another $3,000 at Cutco, which those have got to be 2 good days that I've got to pull out. So I'm nervous, a little scared, a little stressed. And I go into her house and I was a big believer in really rapport, you know, really connecting with the customer and finding out what was important to them and then asking permission to share what was important to me. I would always, you know, I didn't force my goals on them. I would say, hey, Donna, do you mind if I share my goals with you real quick? I'm kind of excited about a few things I'm working on, and would you be open to me sharing them with you? And, you know, 9 out of 10 times, they said, yeah, of course. So I shared my goals with Donna, you know, really passionately. I always inspired her. And I go through the Cutco presentation. And now when I drove up to the house, I didn't usually see wealthy people. Like, okay. My average customer was middle class. I grew up in a small town, not a lot of big houses. You know what I mean?
Even though you're selling expensive knives, you're not going into mansions and trying to sell them. You're selling them to regular people, middle class.
Middle class, okay. People that put it on a 5-pay, right? And so now Donna was a different story. I drive up. It's this, like, it's a huge mansion, right? She's got a BMW and a Mercedes. And so in my head, I'm like, okay, I know she can afford some serious knives, right? She can afford some Cutco. So I'm like, I got to do my best. You know, I can't lose this one. And so I go in, I do my best presentation, and she basically tells me how I don't cook. I already have a, you know, $1,000 set of Hinkles on my counter that's barely been used. So in my head, I'm going, oh gosh, how am I going to pull this off? And I asked her, I said, hey, would you like to go ahead and buy our ultimate set today? You know, the biggest, the best set we have. And she laughs at me. She says, Hal, that's the size of a microwave. What am I going to do with all those knives? I told you, I don't cook. And I said, Donna, I know you're not a big cook, but there's three reasons. There are three reasons that I think you would be crazy not to get Cutco. I think you'd absolutely love it. And she goes, all right. She sits back and folds her arms. She goes, these better be some good reasons, Hal. Let me hear it. And the honest truth is I did not have any idea what I was going to say at that point. I just threw it out there.
You just made up a number three.
I'm like, three reasons. And then I'm like, I'll think of what these are. And I said, you know, there's something along the lines of, you know, they're the best knives in the world. You're going to have them forever. And she goes, I told you, that means nothing to me. I'm going to have those Hinkles forever. I said, and I'll come sharpen your knives once a year. That's part of the guarantee, the service. You know, it's free and you'll see me once a year. And she goes, okay, I don't know if I'll spend that much money for that. And I'm searching. And I said, Donna, I said, you know, I'm not trying to be selfish, but it would help me with that goal to break that all-time record, you know? And I just threw that out there, just pulling at strings. And she goes, oh, I forgot you were trying to break the record. How far away did you say you were? I said, I'm about $2,800 away. She goes, let's get you there, Hal. Put me down for the ultimate set and show me what else you have. And I go through the book, she's going through the book, and she goes, ooh, flatware, we need flatware for the pool house. Put me down for 12 sets. And our flatware's expensive. And we get to the end, and she goes, okay, tell me the total. And I'm adding it on my calculator, and I said, Donna, honestly, I'm really nervous to tell you how much this is going to cost. And she said, Hal, she leans over and puts her arm on my hand. She goes, Hal, as long as I'm not nervous, you have nothing to worry about. And she wrote me a check for like $3,400 that day, and I set the all-time record. So, yeah, so I'm a big believer in sharing your goals in a way that inspires customers to want to help you reach them.
You might have noticed me earlier looking down. It's because I was taking notes. I want to come back and ask you for more details on some of the things that you said. And I also am just an obsessive learner, and the way I learn is by taking notes. And I know that my audience does too. So let me try and experiment with you guys. If you find one thing that's useful out of this interview, one thing that you can bring back to your world, even if you're not offline, if you're all fully techie and you're selling everything online, and if you can find one idea that you can bring to your world and share it in the comments, we're going to take the best one and give them a copy of Hal's book here. I just want to see if we can pull out some of the gems in my interviews and make them more accessible to people who aren't, for some reason, ready to invest an hour of their time to listen to an interview. I want them to see the gem, and maybe then they'll know the value. So in the comments, if you see anything useful, say it there. Just to be clear about this, you weren't a natural born salesperson. In fact, I think the first couple you sold to was related to you. Who were they and how did that go?
Well, the first that I didn't sell to.
Okay, right. Good point. The first that you were trying to sell to, who were they?
Yeah, my grandparents, Nana and Papa, right? And so, yeah, when I was in my Cutco training, you go through a 3-day training. It's really extensive, you know, and it's mostly college students that are getting their start and getting an internship or whatever with the company. So there's, you know, very few with sales experience. I had no sales experience. I go through this 3-day training, and on my second day of training, I got inspired. I was like, I've never done anything great in my life. Like, my whole life, my background was mediocre. My whole, you know, I was never an athlete. You know, I didn't get great grades. You know, I was not one of those students that gave my parents a lot of stuff to put on the fridge except for, like, detention notices or something, right? Mm-hmm. And so I end up going on my second day and I think, I want to do something I've never done before. I want to break this record. It's called the Fast Start Record. The first 10 days, there's all these incentives and these records and, you know, you can win some stuff. And I thought, I want to go sell more than anyone has ever sold in 10 days, which the record at that time was $12,000. And so I leave the office, like I'm high-fiving my manager. I'm like, I'm going to do it. You know, I've got to average 1,200 a day for 10 days, right? It's a lot. And my first two appointments are with my grandparents was number one, because I thought for sure they'll buy. Like, I'll beg them. I'll say, Nana and Papa, I'm trying to break a record. Like, please buy, right? I thought for sure they'd buy. And then their neighbors, who were like my second set of grandparents, they were the second appointment. So I thought, I've got it locked. For sure the first day will be great. I go to my grandparents. I do the best Cutco presentation. I've been practicing it. I'm doing all the demonstrations. I'm cutting stuff. And I get to the end. I'm like, Nana and Papa, you want to go and get a set? And I'm optimistic. I'm thinking for sure they're going to buy. And they said, Hal, we're too old to buy new knives. And I thought, well, you know, they're guaranteed forever. And they go, the forever guarantee is only a few more years for us, something like that. And I remember, no joke, I said, but Papa, you can the guarantee is transferable. So you can hand these down to me and I'll benefit from the guarantee, right? And he didn't think that was funny. And they bought nothing. And so I walked out of there just discouraged, and I go to their neighbors, and I'm thinking, all right, they've got to buy for sure. Same objection. We're too old. And I'm going through my head, I'm thinking, you know, they taught us in training how to handle, you know, it's too much money, you know, you offer payment options, right? It's too many knives, you go to a smaller set, right? But I'm thinking, they didn't teach us how to respond to, we're too old for knives, right? In fact, I think they said, don't see those people, right? Don't show it to people that aren't going to buy. So. So I'm ready to quit, and I call my manager, and I didn't even want to call him, you know, because I didn't have any good news. And I went out there like, I'm going to break this record, and now I got to call and say, I'm 0-2. And I call him literally ready to quit. I was like, I guess, you know, I don't know what I was thinking. I was just excited in the moment, but this is not for me. And I call him, and I tell him what happened. And he goes, Hal, you're probably feeling pretty discouraged right now. Yeah, I said, yeah, definitely, man. I don't know what to say. I feel terrible. He said, there's one of two ways you can respond right now. I said, okay. You know, and I really respect this. You know, his name is Jesse. I really respect Jesse. I've learned from him. He's a lot of integrity, great guy. So I'm listening. He says, you can do what most people would do, which is give in to your discouragement and just quit. Just throw in the towel before you even have a chance to succeed. And I'm in my head. I'm like, yeah, that's what I was going to do. Right. You know, what's option number two? And he goes, or you could do the only thing that a successful person would do. You accept the things you can't change, and you get on the phone, set more appointments, and move forward. And I knew he was right, so I got on the phone that night. I scheduled 10 appointments the next day. I worked from 7 a.m. until midnight, nonstop.
Because you set up that many appointments.
10 appointments, yeah.
10 appointments.
So it took an average of an hour and a half per appointment, so 15-hour workday. And I ended up selling $2,768 that day. And, you know, the rest, as they say, was history. I had lots of ups and downs during my first 10 days. I worked really hard. I did 62 appointments more than anyone else. And that's why I sold more than anyone else. Not because I was some special salesperson. I just was willing to work harder than everybody else was.
All right. You're not a natural. I've obviously seen, we all remember that one kid from, even as far back as elementary school, who just seemed like a natural salesperson. Everyone loved him so much, and he had a sense of confidence, or she was so comfortable with herself that she could sell anything to anyone. You weren't sure. That guy, and that's why I'm especially excited to hear from you. And I want to also go through this list of tactics that you and Jeremy went over that helped you get here, that helped you sell so much. But why don't we start with an understanding of the process? I thought that Cutco started off with a Cutco salesman went door to door, knocking on strangers' doors and selling. You're saying that's not how it works. Why don't you take me back to where you get your customer, what you do to get in the customer's door? How do you develop that rapport that you mentioned? What do you do to show the knives? How do you close the sale? You said that you explain what's important to you, and then you ask them what's important to them. Actually, the other way around.
Yeah.
Walk me through that whole process. We don't have to spend too much time on it, but I do want to understand it. So how do you get why don't we start with where do you get the person?
So when you go through training, you know, on the second day of training, you make a list of everyone that you know that, you know, kind of like network marketing, but it's different in that you're not getting, you know, paid for
people. There's no downline.
You're not recruiting. You're just selling, you know.
So second day of training, they're telling you, start making a list of everyone you know. Already while you're there, they're getting you to be aware of the people who you know who could buy knives.
Yeah, and they're giving you thought joggers. They're saying, you know, mom and dad is a natural, show mom and dad. Anyone that would let you in, you know, let you in. And I think part of what helped me be successful in the beginning is I got out of my comfort zone. Like a lot of people only made a list of like, you know, 12 people. I made a list of 100 and over 100. And at first it started out smaller, but then I think it was because my manager knew I wanted to break the record. He goes, Hal, you got to go bigger, man. He said, you got to think of anyone that you know that knows who you are. So it could be your teachers, grades, kindergarten through, you know, I mean, college. And so I just expanded that list. I contacted them. Something Cutco does is you are paid whether or not you sell. So that takes the pressure off in the beginning. You can literally, legitimately, and honestly tell people, I get paid just to show you the product and I'm getting practice so you don't have to buy anything. And Cutco knows from experience that the knives are so good, they really sell themselves. And that's why the model works. You know,
it's like, and the sales process is so good.
And the sales process is really good. Yeah. And it's word for word. You're literally reading a training manual. When you're new, you go, hey, I'm new. So I'm going to read this so I don't miss anything. Is that okay?
You know what? Sure. Okay. We're going a little out of order here, but that's important to hear. I know that many people who I've talked to who do sales calls have a script, but they don't acknowledge their script because you don't want to sound like you're faking it. You don't want to sound like you're inexperienced. And here you're telling us the opposite worked for you. Why? I mean, doesn't showing the script to someone make them feel like they're just practice and so they're not really paying attention and doesn't it make you lose credibility?
I found that it takes pressure off. And here's the thing, you're not in the beginning, you're not in a situation where it's not a professional sales situation. It's much more of a personal situation, right? Mm-hmm. So you're seeing people that you know. And so when you're like, rather than coming across all polished, you're like, you know, I'm just a fumbling guy with a good product that's going to read this so I don't mess up. And I think it really, the sales wall kind of goes down. They kind of relax and go, okay, this should be fun. This should be entertaining. You know, like you're brand spanking new. Right. And then by the time your first 10 or 20 days are open, now you're getting referrals on every appointment. And again, now if you've got to order, we can kind of get back through it. But now you're memorizing it. Now you don't need to necessarily follow along by the time you're seeing people that you don't know.
Okay. So one of the first things I'm learning is you make a list of the people who you could potentially sell to and go beyond your comfort zone, beyond your expectations, and think of people who know you. And most of us who are selling products are trying to sell it first to our friends or people who we know directly. This would help us think beyond our short list. All right, so you've got your list. Now, when you call to make an appointment, what do you do? What do you say to get them to say, okay, I'll see you?
So when it's new, and by the way, I will tell you, you mentioned something about the script. What I've found in everything from other direct sales companies to corporate America to small businesses, that is one of the major differences is they don't script things. I can't tell you how many salespeople I coach that reach out to me from other companies. And I go, so do you have a phone approach? And they go, no, we don't follow a phone. Like they don't follow a phone script. I go, do you have an approach that you have memorized to get referrals? No, we don't have that. And it's like with Cutco, everything is scripted. You memorize your phone approach. You memorize your referral approach. So you're not just, you know, I see a lot of sales companies where they just have the new guys go on appointments with the old guys, the experienced guys, and just kind of take notes or make mental notes and then go do it on their own. Whereas Cutco, you go through this 3-day extensive training and then you have to memorize all these approaches so that you, when you say it, you can say it with confidence because you're not trying to think of what you're going to say. You've got it memorized like the back of your hand. In fact, they always kind of joke. They go, you should know the referral approach so well that if we were to, you know, come into your house at 2 a.m. and wake you up and say, tell us the referral approach. You could just spout it off, right?
What's a referral approach? That's where you ask someone for a referral.
When you ask somebody for referrals. Okay. Yeah.
So now you've got the person on the phone. What's the, maybe you don't need to hear the exact script, but what are you saying to them to get the person to say, all right, come on into my house tomorrow and show me your knives?
When it's your first people to see list, whatever, you let them know, you know, hey, I just started this new job and as part of my training, I've put on some training appointments and get your opinion on something, on a product. It's just for training, so you don't have to buy anything. You know, if you want to, that's fine, but you don't have to. And I've got 3 openings this week. I've got an opening tomorrow at 4 and one tomorrow night at 2 or 5. Which works better for you? That's it.
I see. So I want your opinion, not your sale. I don't need to have a sale. I'm training, so help me out. And then which of these dates work for you? You're assuming the close. You're letting them pick when they get closed or when they see you, but you're assuming that they will see you.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. So now you get the appointment, you go see them. What happens at that point?
So I start by, I do what I call 2-minute rapport, which is, you know, my philosophy on rapport is different. Like a lot of sales guys, they'll talk to them for like 10 minutes or 15 minutes in the beginning and ask them about all the pictures on their wall and their plants and their yard. And, you know, my feeling was that rapport should be built through who you are and how it comes across. If you come across as a really, you know, caring, sincere, authentic person, that's going to build rapport, you know, and that's done through the entire process, not front loaded to the first 5 minutes. So in the beginning, my way of building rapport, it's essentially I express gratitude. You know, I believe gratitude is kind of the instant rapport builder. I just let them know how much it means to me because most people don't know. You know, if you just go in there and you're doing a sales appointment for somebody and you don't let them know how much their time, how you value their time and how much it means to you, they're not going to assume that. So I let them know how much it means to me. And I usually make a joke by going, look, Ms. Jones, I know this probably doesn't mean very much to you. In fact, you're probably hoping that I get in and out as fast as possible. I can understand that. But I want you to know that this really does mean a lot to me. I value your time. You could be doing anything in the world right now. And the fact that you're hanging out with me and let me come over, you know, I don't take that lightly. I really appreciate it. And so I'll do everything in my power to make sure that you enjoy the time we have together and you know, and we have a good time and that sort of thing.
Okay. And that's the way that you build rapport in 2 minutes?
And then I ask them, I go, by the way, I go, how is your day going today? So I always ask that because I figure you've got to get in their frame of mind. And if they're having a bad day and you don't ask and find that out and connect with them on that, right, then they're, you know, and you just go into your presentation while their whole time they're going, they've got something on their mind, right?
So what happens if there's something on their mind? What happens if they say, hey, you know what? My kid just got into a fight with some other kid in school. They're thinking of kicking him out. I just got a call from the principal a few minutes ago. Now their mind's going to be completely on that.
Sure. So I meet them where they are, right? I go, if they're feeling terrible, I go, that's terrible, you know? And I come from a place of authenticity and sincerity. And I ask them, you know, I said, so what happened? Tell me more. Basically just getting them to talk and kind of talk it through. And then I usually, and this is the, you know, this is my kind of why I became a coach, you know, because, and a speaker, because like, I just naturally am always, I guess I'm a guy, we try to solve problems anyway. But I would ask, you know, I just say, so have you thought about what you might do, you know, and then I'll just kind of ask them and get them to talk through it and share solutions. And so, you know, that sort of thing and go, well, hey, I'm really sorry to hear that. And, I don't want to step on any toes. Are we okay if we move on or, you know, is there anything you want to share or talk about? So just kind of make sure they feel like they've gotten it all off their chest. Right. And so they voiced it, you know where they are, you meet them where they are emotionally, and then you can move on.
Okay. All right. So now you've got some rapport built in there. Now you've got some rapport. What's next?
What's next? So then it's sharing goals. So Ms. Jones, I go, this might be a little bit weird. I believe in our society, people don't talk enough about what their goals are and their dreams and what's important to them. You know, they're usually just talking about the news and current events. I said, so I don't know if you mind, but I would love to know what your goals are. And if you don't want to share, that's totally fine. But I would love to know what your goals are. And then if it's okay with you, I'd love to share what a couple of my goals are. I'm kind of excited about some things I'm working on this year that are different than I've ever worked on before, you know? And then,
so by goals, what your goals are, you're asking them about, like, what could their goals be? I want to help my kid get into college. I want to apply for a new job, that kind of thing. How are you going to help them with that?
I'm not going to help them necessarily.
You just want to know it.
I just want, it's just getting them to share. Yeah.
I see.
And then the way that I do help them is I ask them, I go, hey, what are you doing to move toward that goal? Real basic. What are you doing to move toward that goal? And then if they go nothing, right, I go, how come? I go, what do you think? Is there anything that, and again, I don't want to step on any toes, Mrs. Jones, but is there anything that you could do, you know, that would move closer? You know, I think that sounds like a great goal, right? Acknowledge them for their goal, tell them it's phenomenal, encourage that they can achieve it, and see if there's anything that, you know, any action that they can define that, you know, that they can start taking.
I see. All right. And then you tell them your goal. What's the purpose of telling them your goal? You're here to sell knives.
It goes back to the Donna story. And by the way, I'll tell you, I've had many salespeople or even sales trainers that will debate this point with me, right? And I can debate the other side of, you know, well, that's, it's, it shouldn't be about you. You know what I mean? It shouldn't be about you. And so I could argue that point too, but my experience, has just been, I mean, I shared my goals for, you know, 6 years or however long I was with Cutco, 6 years, I think. And I was one of the top sales reps in the company. And Donna wasn't the only situation where a customer bought, you know, it's kind of like when you're a customer, here's an interesting point. Often people don't feel they deserve something, right? There's a lack of self-worth or insecurities or something. Yep. So for me personally, I was usually seeing housewives, sometimes husbands and wives together, but often I was seeing housewives. And, you know, there are many housewives, at least this is my theory, that they're nurturers, right? They're about their husband and their family, and they might look at something like a high quality investment and high quality cutlery and go, I don't deserve this. Like, I need to put money toward my kids. You know what I mean?
And so how does sharing your goals help them feel that they deserve it?
What it does is it aligns with their value of wanting to help other people. So now it's like, it's like they want the product, but their self-worth or insecurity might be preventing them from feeling like I deserve it. What you're doing is by sharing your goal and letting them know that it would help you. Now, I always told them, Mrs. Jones, and I go by Mrs. Jones, that's my, you know, whatever. So I would always say, now when I would share my goal, I would follow it up. I'd share my goals and I would say, Mrs. Jones, let me be really clear. I do not want you to buy anything today to help me out with my goals. You know, of course, if you get something, it helps me, but in no way do I want that to be your determining factor or why you would buy something. And then, by the way, here's a little bonus tip. I would transition into setting up referrals there. I go, in fact, my main goal, Mrs. Jones, and I know this sounds funny, but my main goal is just that you like me today. You know, that you like me, that you enjoy our time together, so that you feel comfortable introducing me to a few of your friends. Because that's how I get all of my appointments. I don't cold call or go door to door. Every person I see is a personal referral of someone I've seen.
And you ask that early in the process, but you don't ask for the actual referrals. You just set them up and you say, I want you to like me enough that later on when I ask you for referrals, you'll give them to me.
Yeah. And then I follow up by saying, Ms. Jones, now don't worry about that now. You have to make sure you like me first. Fair enough. Now I'll tell you, that is something that was not taught to me in Cutco training. That is something that I developed over time. And the average representative gets 3 to 5 referrals from their customers. I averaged 15 to 20 referrals from my customers, which gave me an endless supply of people to call, you know? And I really believe that was why, because most sales reps, if they ask for referrals at all, which that's another thing that I coach sales reps and in other companies, they don't focus enough on that. And they're always struggling finding people to call. So for me, I would set it up and basically in a positive way, right? I talked about referrals. I planted the seed. I made a joke. I was lighthearted, right? So at the end, I'm not, for the first time, like most sales reps, springing it on them. When they're in their mind, you know, maybe they bought something, maybe they didn't. They've checked out emotionally. They're like, all right, the presentation's done. You know, he's cleaning up. I've got to, and then they're going through their mind. They're projecting into the rest of their day. I've got to go pick up the kids. I've got to make dinner. And then most salespeople go, oh, by the way, Mrs. Jones, I need you to refer me a bunch of people. And at that moment, you're catching them when they're checked out and they're like, they'll think of any excuse not to do it.
Okay.
So for me, I mentioned it at the beginning, planted a seed in a positive way. And then at the very end, I say, Ms. Jones, now this is the most important part. Remember I was telling you in the beginning, my number one goal was just that you like me today. You know, well, I think we got along. Hopefully we got along. But anyway, this is where, and I'd pull out my notebook and I'd have it numbered already 15 to 20. And I'd have a star at 15 and a happy face at 20 in my notebook.
And so now they have a goal of getting to 15 and to 20 with you.
Yep, and their name was already on it from earlier. Either it was already on it at the top, referred by, and I'd have their underline their name, or I'd write it right there. And I'd say, Mrs. Jones, this is the most important part. I just need you to jot down 15 to 20 people, not people necessarily that you think would buy. You know, you never know who's going to buy and who's going to like it. Just anybody that, like you, was nice enough to take a look. And then it'll be up to them. If they want to get it, great. You know, if not, that's
this
totally fine.
Amazing. All right, I want to continue with this. This is so, my mind is starting to go to all the different applications of this process to online sales, even to automated sales, even to the way we design our funnels online. I think it'd be influenced by this. All right. You've ask them, you got rapport, you told them your goals, you've told them that one of your goals is to get referrals, and now comes the sale. How do you sell them on $1,000 knives?
I mean, that's, you know, the Cutco presentation is very demonstration heavy.
Okay.
Because it's not, you know, these aren't salespeople, and because it's such a great product, right? So for example, you know, we go through the features and benefits and all the normal sales stuff. You go through the guarantee, you know, which is a great guarantee. And you're asking questions along the way. How often do you cook? So you're getting an idea for which set is going to be a good fit for them. But then probably the biggest selling points, number one is the first demonstration you do within the first few minutes of opening the book and showing stuff is you pull out the super shears. In fact, here you go. You pull out the super shears, and I don't have a penny with me, but you cut a penny into a spiral. And you show them how these come apart, right? And I feel like I'm doing a Cutco presentation. anyway, I just realized I had those. So right off the bat, they're like, wow, my scissors don't do that. And those are that's really quality. So right there, you set the precedent, like, these aren't like normal products. So if in their mind, they were thinking, oh, this is just going to be
right away. So let me ask you this. How do you demonstrate ideas? Here you have a product that's clearly meant to be demonstrated. What do you do when you're now selling yourself as a speaker if you want to create an equally dramatic demonstration?
I mean, I think as a speaker, it's simple. It's your video, right? You have a video that's, and it's got to be the same thing. In fact, I'm working on a new demo video because I feel like mine doesn't do this well enough, but it's got to be where, right, the first 30 seconds, they're like, wow, that's different, or that's hilarious, or, you know,
that's how you demonstrate.
Yeah. And I think if you're doing other online products, right, mm-hmm. I think you demonstrate it through testimonials. I mean, right, that to me is it's like a demonstration. This is what it, you know, in a way it's a demonstration.
Okay.
Or obviously the power of video, and anything that you do, video is, you know, is the most effective marketing method.
All right, so you do the demonstration, and it's a lot of demonstration, a lot of benefits.
Yeah, we compare what they have, by the way. I say, Ms. Jones, grab your favorite knives, your favorite couple knives out of the kitchen, and then we actually have, and I stopped doing this. I thought it was kind of silly, but we use rope where they actually cut rope with theirs and then they cut it with Cutco. And theirs rarely, you know, unless they just sharpened them or they're brand new, it doesn't go through well. And Cutco goes through in one shot, you know. And then we get leather and they pull out their steak knife and they like saw through this leather. And then the Cutco steak knife is like, it just falls through it.
That's another thing. So I heard Noah Kagan and an entrepreneur who I've interviewed a few times here say that one of the things that he advises other entrepreneurs to do is to ask their customers, what have you used in the past? Why didn't it work? And then compare the past product to what they're selling. And you're doing the same thing here.
Yes.
Okay.
That way they can really feel the difference.
You're actually letting them feel the difference, which is so powerful. All right. I understand the sales process. Let me ask about one other part of this, and then I'm going to go to the notes that you and Jeremy made, which is, you have to ask for the sale. At some point, you have to ask for it. How do you do it?
That's an interesting question. So first I'll teach you how I was taught to do it.
Okay.
And then I'll teach you how I ended up doing it.
Thanks. I like it.
So I was taught to say, so Mrs. Jones, or on my first appointment, Nana and Papa, I wouldn't be doing my job today if I didn't ask you, would you like to place an order for this set of Cutco today and get your super shears for free? Right, so there was always free bonuses, right? Or as Frank Kern calls it, stacking the cool, right? And I started giving away a lot more free stuff, by the way, when I heard Frank Kern talk about that concept of stacking the cool. As many freebies, you know, people don't care about as much about the value or the cost of the freebies. They want quantity. They want, I get this free and this free and this free and this free and this free. So I would take as many of the lower priced items like ice cream scoops and veggie peelers and, you know what I mean? And I'd be like, you get this free, this free, this free, this free, and this free. Even though all together, that might only add up to, you know, a fraction of what one larger item might be. They'd rather have all the cool freebies.
I see. So one knife that's worth $100 is not as dramatic as 10 knives that are each worth $5.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's what you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even five gadgets that are worth a combined $50 is typically going to equate more emotion for a customer than one knife worth double that, right? Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you're stacking the cool. I wouldn't do my job.
If I'm going to ask, would you like to place an order for your set of Cutco today and get this for free? Okay. And then you shut up, right? And then you just be quiet and you wait.
And then you get objections. Well, I'd like to, but I don't know that I have enough credit on my credit card. Or I'd like to, but I have to check with my wife. I have to check with my husband. What do you do with objections? You guys practice those?
Yeah, you practice handling objections. So you go through the five pay is, you know, that you can put it, break it over payments. You know, Ms. Jones, I totally understand, right? I understand what you're saying. A lot of customers feel the same way. And you know, the feel, felt, found method of selling, right? So I understand how you feel. Other people felt that way. We have a five pay and you can break it over five payments with no interest. So it makes it really easy. So instead of paying, you know, $800 today, it's only, you know, $182.55 or whatever. Right. And so then present the investment options.
I see. You're very big on goals. As we went through this sales process, you shared your goals with, this is the way the Cutco did it. You changed the process. How did you change it?
So how I asked for the order. Yeah. So here's what I do. So my philosophy was, when you ask someone, would you like to buy today? You are pinning them in a corner where they have to give you an answer, yes or no. And most people, if they don't have total certainty that the decision to buy your product is the right decision, which the majority of people don't have certainty right away. You know, they say it's the average, it's the fifth time a sale is asked for. You know, that's a popular, you know, statistic, that the fifth time a sale is asked for, the average sale is made, because people have to work through their issues with it. Well, if you say, do you want to get this, yes or no, more than likely they're going to say no, because they don't have total certainty that it's the right decision. And now you've got to deal with the no. So I changed my closing question from, would you like to get it, to, so what do you think?
I think these knives are dramatically impressive. I like the way they cut. I can't believe you're able to spiral a penny.
And what it does is, it doesn't pin them in a corner. They don't feel that pressure of, oh, I'm being sold, or I'm being closed on, or I have to say yes or no.
Okay.
Right? Here's what you get this for free, you know, basically leading up to the point where they feel like it's going to come with a, all right, do you want it? And I would just say, so what do you think? And I would just sit back. And what that does is, most people still have objections, but you've opened up a space where they can just talk about them without having to tell you that they don't want to buy what you're selling. So just a much more comfortable way. And then what I would do is, I would handle the objection, and then we were taught to say, so do you want to get it? But I would just handle it and go, how does that sound? It was always these open-ended, so what do you think? How does that sound? Does that sound better? Is that closer to where you want? You
know? The problem with that is that most salespeople can't ever then bring themselves to ask for the sale. So it's, how does that sound? Oh, okay, so you do like that. All right, and so I helped you overcome that objection. Terrific. But you never say, all right, so should I sign you up now?
I do. If they're not willing to say yes, but that's a great question, great distinction. Because most people, here's the thing, when you say, so what do you think? They will, if they're sold and they're ready, they're like, yeah, that sounds great. Can I, you know, how do I pay for it? I mean, they're gonna ask for the order.
Okay.
If what you're talking about, where they're like, I like it, and if it's not definitive, then I'll go. So would that work for you? Do you want to go ahead and try that set out? You know.
Okay. I see how it works for you. I could see also how it could be an issue for a new salesperson. Here's my hesitation, actually. Someone's listening to this and they're going to hear, all right, this guy Hal's a really good salesman. He never asked for the sale. I hate asking for the sale, because that's when I put myself on the spot. That's when they can reject me and my product, but mostly me. I'm just always going to say, what do you think? And then they'll never get the sale. How do they move from, what do you think, oh, you like it, to, okay, so should I put it on your credit card, or do you want to pay cash?
Yeah, great question. And you know, and I think that's an important as well to be clear that I did start my career for the first few years was by asking for the order. So I think that probably does factor in, like, I did develop the ability and the confidence to be able to say, do you want to get it? So that's a good point. And if a new salesperson, maybe that is something that they'd want to start with.
Okay.
I think I got to the point, though, where it was a very fluid process, you know, selling. It wasn't where I wasn't following the exact script anymore. I was, you know, adjusting and customizing my whole presentation based on their answers to my questions. You know, so it became more fluid. But the easier way to ask for the order is to always ask for one of two options. So still wouldn't say, do you want to get it? I would say, if I go, so what do you think? And they go, yeah, it's nice. I like it. And go, okay, so do you want to go ahead and put on a credit card, or would it be easier to, or, you know, do you want to put it on payments, or do you want to just pay it in full? You know, do you want to do a check, or would a credit card be easier for you?
I see. So now you're, what was that?
Oh, my fan. I'm getting a little hot in here. Oh,
okay. Sorry. Oh, wait, but I wonder if it's going to make noise.
No.
Oh, it seems good. All right. So I see what you're saying. You're assuming the close, and you're giving them two options that each one is a yes. Do you want to pay credit or cash? Do you want to buy this set of knives or that set of knives?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So what I was starting to say earlier is you're a really big goal setter. You talked about how you did it for yourself early on when you're starting to sell Cutco. You talked about how you shared it with your customers and you asked them to tell you about theirs. You also believe in setting very specific goals. Why did you do that? How did setting specific goals help you become a better salesperson?
I'm just a big believer that when you set a specific goal, and setting it's not enough. It's got to be, number one, it has to be specific, but it has to be in writing, right? You have to review it every day. And we'll talk more about kind of focusing on it and reviewing it. But in terms of setting your goals and being specific, I'm a big believer that when you have a specific goal or an intention, I call this the power of intention, where you've got a predetermined, very specific intention, what you're trying to create or what you're trying to achieve. When you have an intention that is clear or a goal that is clear, then the magic starts to happen because your thoughts, your words, and your actions all align with that intention, with that goal. So what I started doing is I started going from just having annual goals or monthly goals or even weekly goals to I would decide how much I wanted to sell every single day. And I'll tell you kind of an interesting story. The first time I had this revelation, I wanted to double my sales from 1 year to the next. Mm-hmm. And I thought so I had been selling for 5 years. I had been one of the top salespeople, and I was about to leave. And I decided I've never fulfilled my potential. Like, I've never really, really committed at the highest level that I could have for an entire year. So I had hit Hall of Fame. I was at this conference where I was going to leave the company. I was like, I was going to go to write a book and be a speaker in my next kind of ventures and my dreams. And I am sitting in the conference and I realize I've never fulfilled my potential. Like, I've never really given it everything I have. And because I always knew I was capable of doing double what I had ever done before in a year. My best year ever, I had tied that year twice, two of the top years. I thought I knew I could do double because I knew that I hadn't worked as hard as I could. So I'm sitting at home one night. You know those moments where you're laying in bed and you're like, your mind's racing, you're thinking about your goals or whatever, right? And so because I had a specific predetermined goal, my thoughts started to align with it. I thought, okay, the only way I can achieve this goal, there's one of two ways. I can either work twice as hard, right? Do twice as many phone calls and sales presentations as I did to have my previous best year in order to double it. Or I can figure out how to get better. What if I could double my average sale per customer? And then I started thinking, how would I do that? And I started reverse engineering it, where I was like, well, how do I currently, like, my average per sale currently, what creates that? And I thought, well, it's the series of words that I use. It's the order of it. So it's how high I start when I show whatever I start with. Say, hey, this is our set. What do you think? It's how high I start. It's how slowly I drop down. Do I rush dropping down?
You mean
drop down in the price.
I see.
Yes,
so instead of starting off with the cheapest product and hoping people like it and maybe they want to upgrade to something better, you might start with a more expensive product and think, hey, how do I go higher? How do I slowly bring them down? Maybe not even bring them down to a lower option. And you wrote this down and you said, I want to double my sales after having a couple of years of stagnating sales numbers. Did you hit it?
Did I end up hitting it that year?
Yeah. Did you end up doubling your sales?
Yeah. I ended up, just more than doubling it.
More than doubling.
Yeah.
And you wrote do you have, how do you write it down? Do you have something next to you now that you're looking at with your daily goal, your yearly goal that you can show us?
I think they're all in my affirmations in my iPod and, or my iPad, I mean. Let me see. I'm trying to see what I have here. Here you go. This is kind of my goals without showing you. Actually, yeah, this is my goals.
Can you show? Well, we're barely going to be able to see it.
Yeah, well, I don't want you to know all my goals. So right? But so I've got them broken down. I've got my top three goals for the year, and then each goal is supported with an action. The number one action I need to do on a daily or weekly basis to produce that result, right?
So what's the number one action? Give me a goal and one number one action example.
Okay. Number one, grow my VIP coaching to 300 plus members. So I've got this group coach. It's a $97 a month group coaching program that it, you know, uses an online membership site and all of that. So my goal is to grow that to 300 members. And then the action is to continue doing what I've already been doing, right, which is through referrals. So every time someone signs up for my coaching, I let them know. I say, hey, you get for every person you refer, you get $10 off of your coaching. So it's 97 a month. If you refer 10 people or for every person that you refer that signs up, if you refer 10 people and all 10 of them sign up, you get your coaching for free.
So your goal today is to get one of your customers to give you a referral?
A lot of referrals.
A lot of referrals.
So here's what I do is to create a little bit of scarcity, I say, so I say, you're going to get a survey now. Like they just signed up and they're going to get an email for the membership site with their username and password. They're also going to get a welcome survey. And there's a link in the survey or a link in the email that has a link to the survey. And it's got questions on what do you want to get out of the coaching program? What are your goals, et cetera, et cetera. And the last question asks, is there anyone you know that could benefit from this coaching? And that's the referrals. And you just put down their name and their cell phone number. And so, and what I let them know is I say, cause I work within certain companies. Like I usually get referrals within one company and then I get referred to everyone in that company. And then I move to another company. And so I let them know, I say, now this is obviously when you're referring people, if they've already been referred, the credit goes to whoever referred them first naturally. And they go, yeah, that makes sense. I go, so what that means is, you know, I wouldn't wait on this. I would do this tonight. I've got more calls with other people tonight and they're within your same company. And so obviously you don't want to, you know, wait a week and procrastinate and, you know, fill out your referrals. And all of a sudden you realize that five of them got referred this week.
And now there's an incentive to give you a lot of names so that they could be first with them. And there's an incentive to do it quickly because otherwise someone else might give you the exact same name. I see.
Exactly. Yeah. And I average, somewhere around 10 referrals, you know, per person. And that's how I've grown. That's how I've grown it. It's all referrals. I haven't had to do any online marketing.
I did an interview with actually a course with Jermaine Griggs, this guy who sells courses that teach people how to play piano by ear. And he is such a good salesman. He has on his wall, and he turned his camera over and showed me different motivational hooks that he got out of books like the book Influence by Robert Cialdini. And when he tries to tell when he tells someone about his program, he always tries to use at least one of those different tactics. So nice. You're saying scarcity. I could imagine him on his wall saying, how do I use at least scarcity when I make this pitch now? And yeah. It seems like you do the same thing.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that book because, you know, and that's why you mentioned Starting High, the law of contrast, you know, scarcity. If you're watching this and you haven't read the book Influence by Robert Cialdini, you have to read that book. I'm sure you'd agree.
Such a good book. Absolutely. Yeah. Go get that freaking book. But I imagine most people listening already have read that book.
Yeah,
It's so good. I say that because I want them to feel that now if they didn't read it, they better go and read it. Everyone else has.
Now wait, that's after they read The Miracle Morning.
The Miracle Morning. I got it right here.
Oh, there you go.
You also want to hold yourself accountable. I know that's one of the things that you told Jeremy helps you. How do you hold yourself accountable?
Well, not hold yourself accountable. That's the ultimate goal. But I believe that accountability is crucial to success, right? I mean, the parallel between accountability and achievers is irrefutable. And whether, you know, if you're a CEO, you've got more accountability than anybody else. You've got your executive staff, you've got the board of directors, you've got the shareholders, you've got all this accountability. And I think if it wasn't for all that accountability, you'd find a lot more CEOs playing words with friends all day on their phone. Not that they don't already, but the point being, accountability is crucial, and I believe that you've got to seek out systems for accountability. So that could be an accountability partner. It could be someone in your company that you work for, right? But it's got to be, to make accountability effective, it's got to be rigid, it's got to be scheduled, it's got to be consistent, as in a phone call, you know, 5-minute call every morning at 7 a.m., right?
Let me see if I understand this. We're going to get to how you made so many phone calls, despite the fact that, you know, there's a lot of failure at the other end of the phone. I'm going to ask you about that in a moment. But let's suppose someone's listening to us right now and they say, I need to make 10 phone calls a day. Every day I wake up and something happens, but really it keeps me from doing it. But really, I know I'm procrastinating. I'm not holding myself accountable. Now, this guy, Hal, is saying he's got a solution for me. How do I do it? How do I get this accountability to keep myself, to get myself making phone calls? What do we say to that person?
So for me, I used my first accountability resource was my manager, right? My manager, Jesse, who I committed. He said, hey, if you want to break this record, Hal, you have to commit to calling in every single day, every morning when you wake up, every night before bed, and between every single appointment. He said, or if you're committed to that, right, I can support you and hold you accountable the whole way.
Meaning he will take your phone call after you're out of an appointment. And that's how you make that's how you hold yourself accountable to actually take the appointment.
Well, it's just how I account for everything. It was just, and also it was so he could help manage my mindset, right? And having a coach is another great way to get accountability. You know, hire a professional coach. That's something that I've, you know, done over the years. But I think the most important thing with accountability is you have to understand how important it is and why we resist it. See, most people resist accountability. We rebel against it. We resist it. And I believe that, and I've written about this in books, but I believe that that is because as children, it was forced upon us by the adults in our lives. Our parents held us accountable to go to bed at a decent hour, to bathe, to eat vegetables, right?
It starts to feel oppressive. Parents, I don't want any more of this.
What'd you say?
It starts to feel oppressive. No one wants more of that.
Yeah, we didn't ask for that accountability, but if it wasn't for our parents, we would have been sleep deprived, you know, dirty, malnourished little kids, right? Then we go to school, our teachers force accountability on us. So most people, when they become adults, it's this downward spiral into mediocrity where they resist accountability and they embrace freedom. And what they don't realize is the only reason that we get results in our life typically is because of some form of accountability. And unless you're one of the 1 out of 1,000 people that are masters at holding yourself accountable, you've got to seek it from other people, whether it's a colleague, a coworker, a superior, a mentor, a professional coach, or my favorite method of accountability, which this is what I did the year that I doubled my sales. I reached out at when I decided I wanted to double my sales, I reached out to probably 30 other sales reps that were top sales reps for my company, but that I believed were capable of more. And I said, hey, are you willing to do an accountability call every week, every Sunday night that all host it and that you've got to commit to show up every week? And I ran this call for 52 weeks. I didn't get a commission. I didn't get paid. But here's the thing. I was holding them accountable on the call. And who do you think felt the most accountable to follow through and not look like a fool? Right? It was me. So I benefited the most. So that's anyone watching this. If you want to take your accountability to the highest level and do it with no investment of money, you don't have to hire a coach, right? Form an accountability team, you know, 2 people, 3, 4, 5 people where you hold them accountable to follow through with their actions on a weekly basis. And you share what you're committed to. And then there's no way you're not going to follow through and look foolish in front of these people that you called to this group, right?
All right. So we've talked about all the successes, but when you're calling people, even if they're referrals, there's a lot of rejection, a lot of people who don't want to see you, who maybe say some insulting things before they reject you.
Sure.
How did you deal with that?
It was another one of those at night tossing and turning, you know, just thoughts running. I picture myself in my apartment. I have this realization. I had just had a bad day that day. I actually had a bad night on the phone. I had made like, you know, 30 phone calls and set 0 appointments. And I felt like crap, right? I was so discouraged, you know, and I'm second guessing, should I pick another career and go get a regular job where I just show up for a paycheck, right? And as I'm that night falling asleep, I have this realization. I just had one bad day on the phone, but over the course of this year, I will have amazing days, I will have average days, and I will have horrible days. That's just a fact, right? The averages always go up and down. I thought, I am so emotionally attached to my results every day. And it causes me to ride this emotional roller coaster, often doubting myself, second guessing my career choice, you know, et cetera, getting discouraged, right? Just feeling overall unhappy. And I thought, my results this year, my income, my goals, everything I want to achieve is based on the process of making phone calls. And if I make 10 phone calls a day for the entire year, at the end of the year, here's a little math equation for us. I'm going to sell X amount, right? 10 calls a day equals X amount at the end of the year. If I make 20 calls a day, that equals 2X. I will sell twice as much, almost to the T, within a few hundred dollars maybe. And I had this epiphany. I thought, I just need to be committed to the process of making 20 calls a day and not be emotionally attached to my results, because I'm not in it for a day. It's not a one-day job. So why would I care how a day went? Why would I care how a phone session went? And even more so, why would I care if Mrs. Jones on the other end was rude to me, said, I'm not interested, don't call here again, and hung up on me? And if you're a salesperson, you've had that call, and you get that feeling in the pit of your stomach, and you're this internal dialogue, why is she so rude? I'm a good person. I don't deserve that, right? And now when I defined this new strategy, I thought, my goal every day is to tally 20 calls. And you got to have it in writing, by the way, Andrew, right? It's got to be in my schedule every day. I wrote 20 calls, 20 calls, 20 calls. And then every day I tallied those 20 calls. And my goal was to make those calls as fast as I could, because I knew that that's all I needed to do. And if I set zero appointments, instead of getting off the phone going, man, I can't believe I didn't set anything. How am I going to? I went, cool, I get the day off tomorrow. Because I knew that the next time I would set 4 appointments and it would all work itself out. So now, here's the beauty of it, how powerful this strategy is. Now, when Mrs. Jones was rude to me, when my prospect was like, don't ever call here again, I don't want what you're selling, click, I'm like, sweet, that's the fastest call I could have made.
One less. 19 to go.
And I'll tell you, here's how that resulted, big picture. That resulted in, I came up with that strategy the first week of January in 2000, so 13 years ago. 4 months later, our sales was broken into three campaigns, spring, summer, fall. At the end of the spring campaign, following 20 calls a day without stressing over anything, I was the number one sales rep out of 50,000 reps in the company. But the best part was, they were all stressed out. I had the easiest job in the world. I made 20 calls a day, then I went and laid out by the pool every day.
Did you meditate, by the way?
Meditate?
Yeah.
I didn't then, but I do now.
You do now.
Yeah. That's part of the miracle morning, Andrew. Yeah.
Why do you meditate? That's where I got it, actually. I got the book here. I couldn't find the note that I had. So I said, that's an easy way to introduce it. You meditate. Why do you meditate?
Why do I meditate? I think why I started meditating is because I started, you know, reading about it. In fact,
I did have the sticky note on the meditation.
Nice.
I took the sticky note that you used to write on
or,
the book when you sent
Andrew.
It to me. To highlight the sections I want to talk about. Yeah, so sorry, why do you meditate?
It's hard to answer that. I mean, it's one of my favorite times of the day, you know, and it's usually only 5 or 10 minutes in the morning during my miracle morning. It's the first part of it. But if you haven't meditated, and by the way, when I first started meditating, if anybody's ADD, where my mind's all over the place, a million miles an hour, in case you couldn't tell. The first time I tried to meditate, it was really hard. You know, and I Googled it. How do you meditate? And I'm reading the instructions and I'm like, okay, sit there and just clear your mind. And I'm like, it's not working. You know, I'm not very good at this. Now that I've practice makes perfect, I've gotten better at it. It's just the only time where, to me, I get to tap into the essence of being, right? Like there's no problems. There's no worries. There's not even any, there's just the essence of life, you know? And again, it's hard to put it into words to me, but I do it because it's one of my favorite things to do, and it gives me such peace. And it's really an escape from the day-to-day grind, and it's an escape from your stresses and your challenges, and it's a chance to just really connect with who we are and, you know, at our most fundamental level. So
What's the app that you use that helps you meditate?
The Miracle Morning app? No, but I use... I don't even know. I've got like five. I've Googled like five.
What's the Miracle Morning app?
Say that again.
What's the Miracle Morning app?
It's got a journal and it's got a lot of the practices from the Miracle Morning. And I, every morning I manually send out a message, like a motivational quote or something from me.
You created the app. You didn't hand code it, but your guys created it for you.
Yeah. So here we go. So I'm looking at my meditation apps to find out, remember which ones are my favorites. Mindfulness and Simply Being. Those are my two favorite. If you want a male voice, mindfulness. If you want a female voice, Simply Being.
And for me, it says it as you meditate.
As you meditate. Yeah, so those are guided meditation apps, yeah. A lot of times I use the app and it just varies on, if I'm really tired, you know, I'll use a guided meditation. If the morning, like I just didn't wake up on the right side of the bed, I'll use a guided meditation typically because my ability to focus is not there. But if I'm like the average morning where I'm just, you know, I'm focused, I'm ready to go, I meditate without the guided meditation.
All right. Let me say a couple of thank yous and give people a suggestion. And then I want to come back and ask you about two things.
Okay.
One is going to be a bit of a challenging question, but I think it's important to challenge you on this because it's a concern that the audience has. And I know they're going to think it as soon as I mention this one word. And the second is I want to hear about death, since I mentioned it at the top of the interview and I didn't talk about it. Something interesting happened to you that's important for us to bring up. But first, the person who introduced me to Hal is Dustin Delera. I only talked to him via email, so I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I'm looking at it here. Dustin Delera or maybe Dustin Deyera. And I love when someone hears me in an interview and says, I can help out. And that's how this interview happened. The two interviews that if you want to hear guys who were influenced by Cutco, who are entrepreneurs, but earlier on they were selling Cutco and that's how they learned to sell. Mike Alfred, Mike Alfred, you can go to mixergy.com/find and find it. Or Justin Winter. Justin is the guy who created candles that have diamonds in the center, and when you melt down the candles all the way to the end, you get this ring with a diamond on it. It could be worth $5. It could be worth, I think, hundreds of bucks. The business just frankly took off because of the reaction that you just gave. A lot of people had that.
That's cool.
And if you want to listen to those interviews and hundreds of other interviews and courses, go to mixergypremium.com. The way Mixergy works is we put these interviews out there for everyone to see. We encourage you to download it, create a little bit of scarcity because we tell you, hey, if you don't download it now, it's going to go to Mixergy Premium. And so people will download it very quickly. But if you want to go back and listen to the archive of hundreds of entrepreneurs who tell you their stories, if you want to be inspired by them and learn the way that you see me doing right here by taking notes and then thinking, how can I apply this? How can I ask my guest not just about their goal, but share my goal with my guest and then drive towards it throughout the interview? If you want to do what I do, which is use what I've learned from all these interviews, go to mixergypremium.com. You'll get those interviews and dozens of courses. I mentioned Jermaine Griggs, the guy who is incredible at selling, who's automated his whole sales process. That course is part of mixergypremium.com, and I urge you to check that out. All right. Here is the challenging part. Affirmations. That's the word that if I say is in this book, many people are going to say, that's not the book for me. I got to go away. Because what we think of with affirmations is the Stuart Smalley character who says, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough,
and doggone it, people like me.
Right. You say it into the mirror. I haven't found a successful entrepreneur who I interviewed, I don't think, who starts his day with the affirmations, except for people who are, you know, who are coaches. They seem to start their day with affirmations. So tell me your opinion about affirmations.
So I first learned about affirmations when I read Think and Grow Rich. I think that was the first book that introduced me to him.
Me too.
And I printed off the self-confidence affirmation from that book, Think and Grow Rich. And I started reading it every day. And I decided to I was skeptical too. So I was skeptical about affirmations and whether they would work. And so here's what I decided to do. I thought, what is the most deeply held limiting belief that I have? Right? The most deeply held limiting belief that I have. And what I came up with was, I have a bad memory. Now, most people have that belief about themselves, but what's different is because of my car accident and the brain damage that I suffered, this is how bad it was. If you would come to visit me in the hospital, Andrew, in the first, you know, few weeks that I was there, you would come to visit me, you could spend 2 hours with me, and then you would go to lunch at the hospital cafeteria and come back, and I would not know you were there for 2 hours with me. I had zero short-term memory. And it was like that for really 6 months, really bad, and then it got gradually over years, it got better. But so I had built in this deep belief that I have brain damage, my memory's horrible. So I thought, I'm going to create an affirmation, not that lies. Some bad affirmations, I disagree with a lot of the way people teach where you have to say, I am statements. I am rich. I am successful. Your brain, whether subconscious or conscious, goes, bullshit, no, you're not. You know, like, they don't believe, it doesn't buy it. So I couldn't write, I have a great memory, because I'm like, I'd read it and go, that's not true. But I could write, my brain is a miraculous organism with the ability to generate new cells and heal itself. And my memory, I'm committed to my memory improving every day, a little bit every day, until it is amazing. And I have the best memory of anyone I know. So I could buy into that. I could buy into the healing ability, right? So I start reading that every single day. And whenever someone said, Hal, hey, will you remember to call me or will you remember to do anything? I always said, I have brain damage, dude. You're asking the wrong guy. I can't remember anything, right?
Literally, that's what you would say out loud to them.
Literally, that's what I said out loud. I affirmed it. It was in my own head and I would say it to them. I'd say, I have brain damage. I have a horrible memory. I was in a car accident, if you don't know, and I can't remember anything, you know? Or I would just, write it down, right? But I never, ever, ever, I had zero trust for my memory. Like a lot of people don't have trust in themselves to, whether it's confidence or whatever. So I created this affirmation. I read it every single day. And it was, I don't remember if it was 1 month or 2 months after reading it. It was within the first couple of months after reading it every single day that I remember a friend said, Hal, hey, dude, will you remember to call me tomorrow or remind me? And I don't remember the exact verbiage, but will you remember to call me or remember this? And I said, yeah, no problem. And I hung up the phone and I was like, whoa. And it was just this, I was like, it worked. Like, I really believe that I'm going to remember to call him tomorrow. And that was 9 years after my accident. 9 years of reinforcing the belief with 2 months of affirmation, and it was changed. So I started creating affirmations for every area of my life that I wanted to change, goals that I wanted to accomplish, reminding me of my values, why I was doing what I was doing. And I'm a big believer, and it's known as fact, really, that right, everything is programmed into our subconscious mind. Everything that we read, think, say, etc., especially if you do it with emotion. Right. So I talk about in the book, I break down step by step how to create affirmations the right way and how to use them and read them in a way where it's really going to impact your subconscious mind at a deep level.
I see it here. What Henry Ford said, and you quoted in the book, is whether you think you can or think you can't, you're right either way. And you have this 5-step process for creating affirmations, as you described. You mentioned death. What happened? Actually, you mentioned the accident. I just said death over and over. What happened?
Yeah. So when I was 20, I had been selling Cutco for a year and a half. And as one of the top reps, I was always asked to give speeches. So I gave a speech one night. I got my first standing ovation. And I wanted to call my mom and dad to tell them how great the night was. I got a standing ovation. But it was 11:30 at night. So I got in my brand new Ford Mustang that I had just bought with my own money, Cutco money. I was a sense of pride, new car smell. 11:30 at night, Northern California. I got on the freeway. And I set my cruise control at 70 miles an hour. And my best friend, Jeremy, got stuck at the red light on the on-ramp. And my last memory from that night is I saw Jeremy in the rear view getting stuck at the red light. And I thought, too bad for Jeremy, right? So I got on the freeway. And a couple minutes later, approximately 11:34 p.m., a man I had never met before left a bar a couple miles up, only he was intoxicated off of 2 beers, right? He was what you'd call buzzed, but buzzed enough and tired enough that he got on the freeway going the wrong way. And he got his Chevy truck, much larger than my little Mustang, up to 70, 80 miles an hour, merged all the way over. He thought he was in the slow lane. It was my fast lane. And at 11:35, 11:36 p.m., his truck hit my car head on at 70 miles an hour. It sent me into oncoming traffic, and the car behind me hit me in the door at 70 miles an hour and crushed the left side of my body. In fact, not to get graphic, but so this is the, like, if you can see, but this is where I have a metal rod in my arm. You can see my elbow. So
I hope the audience can see it. I can see it.
Yeah, I broke 11 bones on this side of my body. My femur broke in half and came out the side of my leg. I don't want to get too graphic, but my humerus broke in half, crushed my elbow.
The images are actually on YoPalHal, as in like your pal, YoPalHal.com, your site, where people can see what you look like right after the accident.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
And so Jeremy got to the scene first. He was only a minute behind me. He called 911. He called my mom and dad, woke him up out of bed, let him know it was bad. I mean, I literally, I broke the bones in my eye. The top of my head was cut open. My ear was hanging on by half of an inch. So I was bleeding from head to toe. And Jeremy found me and I was in a coma. Instantly unable to withstand the pain, I was in a coma. And so I'm on the side of the freeway, 11:30 at night, freezing cold, December 3rd, Northern California, and real cold. And my car is just smashed. In fact, I don't know if You can see. There's my, that's, there's me in my car.
I see it.
And that's so I, when they finally pulled me out of the car, it took them an hour to cut me out of the car. And when they did, I actually died. And, I bled to death in the car. And I was clinically dead for 6 minutes, a coma for 6 days, and came out of the coma and they said I would never walk again. So that was kind of my experience with the accident.
And how'd you get out of it? How'd you recover?
You know, I'm a big believer in positive thinking, but not that it solves all your problems. I just think it allows you to stay clear-headed by focusing on the solutions and focusing on what you have to be grateful for and feeling, you know, positive, as opposed to focusing on the problem, dwelling on the things you can't change, etc. So for me, I completely accepted the fact that I couldn't change what had happened to me, so there was no point in feeling sorry for myself or feeling bad about it, and I focused on my recovery. And the doctor said I would never walk again. And I remember I told my mom and dad, this was like 2 weeks after the accident. I said, the doctors came in and said, Hal, you may never walk again. You know, we don't know. I have a metal rod in my leg, a 14-inch rod in my leg, a rod in my arm, two screws in my elbow, three metal plates in my eye. And when the doctors left, I told my mom and dad respectfully, I said, look, the doctors might be experts in medicine, but they're not experts in me. You guys don't, because my mom and dad were like trying to hold back tears. I said, I'm going to walk again, you guys. Don't worry. I'm going to walk again. And a week later, they took x-rays again. And they said, they came in and said, we don't know how to explain it, Hal, but your body is healing at a miraculous rate. And we're going to let you try and take your first step today. So, you know, I mean, it's a miracle, call it what you want, but yeah, so I took my first step and then I just focused on recovery. 7 weeks later, I left the hospital and against doctor's orders, I decided I wanted to go back to work and compete in a sales competition. So
unbelievable, actually. And how'd you end up doing with the sales competition?
That's funny. So what happened was I held the record for the 2 week sales competition at that point. I had set the record of selling $18,000 of Cutco in 2 weeks. That was a year before. And my best friend, Jeremy, the one that found me at the scene of the accident, he was visiting me one night and I said, hey, what are you doing? He said, oh man, I got to go. I got to get on the phone. Push period starts tomorrow. That's the name of the sales contest. Push period starts tomorrow. And I was like, oh man. I was like, I was planning on winning this push period. You know, I forgot. And I said, dude, how crazy would it be if I sold for a push period? What if like someone drove me to my appointments and I sold Cutco? And he just kind of laughed and I laughed. And then he left and I was by myself. And I thought, what if I really did that? And I started thinking, how could I do that? Like, that would be crazy. Like, I had brain damage to where the doctors had already confirmed I would not have a driver's license for at least 6 months. So I couldn't drive. I had severed a nerve in my left arm. So this was the extent of the motion in my hand. I could not lift up my hand. I could not lift up my fingers. So, I mean, I was walking around like this all the time. And I couldn't walk. I was just learning to walk. And so I called my manager. I said, how much do you think it's going to take to win a trophy at the push period? He said, probably about $3,000 or $4,000, Hal. He said, and then he laughed. Why, are you going to try to win a trophy? And I got all dramatic. I'm like, you'll see me on stage. I'm going to win a trophy. I'll see you. And I think I hung up on him or something, right? And I get home, and any salesperson knows that picking up the phone is the hardest thing. You know, it's like picking up the phone, making calls sometimes is challenging, especially when you haven't done it for 2 months. I'm out of the loop, right? I'm no good. No, my habits have died. And I was exhausted. My body was healing. I was always tired. Long story short, I called my mentor, and we need a mentor. You know, if it wasn't for my mentor in the beginning, I would have quit. If it wasn't for my mentor at this time, I would have not done what I was about to do, which is I called my mentor. I said, man, I have no motivation. I'm exhausted. I can't. And I'm having trouble getting on the phone. I don't know what to do. And he goes, Hal, why don't you make 5 calls and then call me back? Can you make 5 calls and call me back? I'm like, I could do 5 calls. And the lesson there, by the way, is like chunk what your activity is, right? Break it down into small chunks. It's easier to commit to the next step or the next 5 steps. So I make 5 calls. I set one appointment. And Andrew, what happens when you schedule an appointment or get with a prospect and, you know, get a sales call? Your energy go up or down?
Starts to go up.
Goes up. So I'm like, I call Jesse back. I'm like, dude, I'm doing it. I'll call you later. I got an appointment. And in the next 4 days, there was only 4 days left of the 2 week competition, by the way. So I didn't have the full 2 weeks. I had 4 days. My dad drove me to my appointments. He helped me hold the other side of the rope because I couldn't use this hand. It was a collaborative effort, team effort, and I sold $7,000 in 4 days. And out of 500 sales reps at the conference, I walked on stage with the cane, you know, limped on stage, and I took the number four trophy out of 500 sales reps. And I was in tears, and my mom, well, because first I saw my mom in the front, and she's like crying, and my dad's crying, and other people are crying, and I start crying, and you know, it was probably one of the most, just one of the proudest moments of my life, because it was the hardest thing that I ever did.
That's such an inspiring story. It is so inspiring to see. This whole interview actually has been inspiring. I want, and I hope that this works out, the audience to just pull out one thing that they got of value out of this interview and just share it with everyone else in the comments. I know that you guys who are listening to me take notes on these interviews because you're high achievers and because often you will email me your notes. I don't want to just be the only one to see it. Put it in the comments. Let's try it with this interview and see if maybe this is something that we can start building on. In the comments, tell me one thing that you got out of this interview. What you say it in any way you want. And second, if you want to follow up, here's a great place to do it. The book is called The Miracle Morning. I didn't even get into all the topics in here. I'm going to suggest one that we didn't cover, which is how to wake up early. I know a lot of you want to start your days properly, and that's a really good section of the book. I'm looking for it. The one you say to get up at 5 a.m., or am I just remembering that?
No, I really say you can get up, I mean, whenever you want. I share that was when my first day of waking up earlier than I had to. You know, most people wake up because they have to and they resist waking up and they hit the snooze button and they create this energy of like, I don't want to wake up, which to me is a really negative energy. It's like, I don't want to wake up and live my life and create the results I say that I want. I'd rather lay unconscious for a few more minutes. So anyway, that's another conversation. But no, so my first time was I was waking up at 6 a.m. because I had to for work. And I was like, if I want to change my life, I got to do something different. I'm going to start waking up at 5 a.m. and working on myself every morning for an hour from 5 to 6 a.m., an hour of personal development, meditation, affirmations, visualization, journaling, exercise, reading, you name it. All the practices that we've all been told over the years by all the experts and self-help gurus and authors, these will change your life. Any one of them will change your life. I put six of them into an hour. And within 2 months, I had doubled my income and just everything had turned around. So yeah, for me, it was 5 a.m. And it was so good, by the way, that after a week of it, I wanted more. So I moved it to 4 a.m. And now I wake up at 3:30.
3:30 today is when you woke up.
It's funny. This is counterintuitive to the book, but I snoozed. Today was a tough day. I snoozed till 4.
You lazy sack of bones. You 4 a.m. Sure. All right. I always say if you got anything of value out of these interviews, also just find a way to say thank you to the interviewee. You're not just looking to sit back and be entertained with Mixergy. You want to use it and you also want to connect with the guests. And an easy, best way to do it is by just saying thank you. I was just thinking earlier in this interview how I said, I don't know why this random thought came to me, but how did I get Guy Kawasaki to do so many favors and help out with Mixergy so much? I thought, what did I start off with? Oh yeah, years ago, I learned from his book and I built my first company with a lot of help from one of his first books. And I sent him a thank you email. It's got to be in my inbox right now because I've kept the same inbox for years. And I just said, hey, I got so much out of your book. I just thank you for putting it together and making it available to us. And he responded. And you know, since then, he's done a lot with Mixergy, and I really appreciate it. So all that's to say, if you got anything of value, find a way to say thank you to Hal. And also, if you read the book, just find a way to say thank you for the book and tell them what you've learned from it. I'm going to do it right now by saying thanking two people. You, the viewer, thank you for being a part of Mixergy and helping me grow this and helping me even find guests the way that Dustin did. And also, Hal, thank you so much for doing this interview.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this all week.
Yeah, thanks. Bye, guys.